Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
And welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer Nadolski, and I got my co-host, Dr. Carl Nadolski Jr.
Hi.
We are the Docs Who Lift. So this week, we want to talk about the hoopla around this idea of too much lean mass lost from glucagon-like peptide 1 agonists. And could be just incretins in general, because that should also include tirzepatide, which is also a GLP-1 GIP agonist. This all came about. There have been some papers questioning this and some people on Twitter, but a physician, Dr. Peter Attia, wrote a blog about this that was published last week. And it is February 24th, so it was like last week, whatever, mid-February, where it basically, I think it fearmongers.
No, can you read like his conclusion or anything? Like, what did you get from it? Because he does tend to, he tends to sensationalize things.
Sensationalized a little bit.
Didn't I just tell you that? I know you didn't watch the thing with, who's the actor that plays Thor?
Oh, Chris Hemsworth, yeah.
Yeah, and he was on that special with Chris Hemsworth. And he told him that cold water immersion reduces cardiovascular risk better than any of the medications we have available, like statins and aspirin and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I still have yet to find that evidence. I can't wait to ask Cardio Twitter about that.
Yeah, you should.
So anyways, I now I don't believe anything Peter Attia says.
Yeah. There's a little, I mean, so the gist of the title of it says lean mass loss and GLP-1 agonist, a downside of the quote miracle drugs. It basically talks about how, like, hey, we need to care about body composition. Now, if you're listening to this, we are literally the Docs Who Lift podcast. If there's anybody that cares about body composition on a podcast with a couple of physicians, it's us. It's also Barbell Medicine. We'll give them a shout out, our buddies over there.
Yeah. They were on our most recent one.
Yeah. Right? They're also Docs Who Lift. So let's give them a shout out. But in general, if there's a physician out there doing a podcast, it's us that we care about body composition. And we talk about this all the time because BMI, you know, we talk about BMI may not be the best marker, but it's okay for most people.
For an individual. And muscle's good. Muscle is healthy. We have plenty of data to show that muscle mass always correlates with health benefits, from cardiometabolic benefits like diabetes and heart disease to functional health and well-being.
Yeah.
And we know that something called sarcopenia, where people lose too much weight and they're frail, that's a bad thing. And in fact, people who have abdominal obesity but are frail, they're thin, they have low BMIs, but they have all this high cardiometabolic risk, they're actually at some of the highest risk of disease. So muscle mass is very important. We know for sure that more muscle is good unless you obtain it through means that are unhealthy, like, you know, anabolic steroids or something.
My brother had hulking pecs in utero. Anyway, so we do care.
At least you change it up.
Yeah,
because
if you're thin, you have abs, but you also have. I'm pretty sure. Well, actually, if anybody's listening, anybody knows what the myostatin gene is. His was turned off in utero. I don't know what happened. I'm not sure what happened. I got stuck with having to work extremely hard to get a tiny ounce of muscle. Anyway,
I worked hard.
You did, but you also had
my Hulk Hogan
muscle
in
utero. Anyway, adiposity is very important as well, though. Having just a ton of muscle, but a lot of adiposity in the wrong places will cause disease, or can cause disease, I should say, but likely will. So it's not that, and I've heard some people say that the issues from obesity are just from a lack of muscle. That's not true. A lot of people with obesity
have
plenty of muscle.
In fact, we have a lot of guys who have a really good history of weight training, but due to a variety of reasons, from genetics through our obesogenic environment, et cetera, they end up with abdominal obesity and they do suffer the consequences of type 2 diabetes and cardiovascular disease, despite having a lot of muscle. Luckily, their muscle is protecting them a little bit and helps us out. But
okay, so the gist of his blog basically says that, hey, we got to be careful about what type of weight we're losing, which, of course, we absolutely should be looking at that. And he talks about how do these drugs work in terms of body composition, And so he talks about about 25% of total weight loss is usually lean mass loss when losing weight. And it does vary depending on the method of weight loss. Obviously, if you're using cocaine and some other things, I have no idea what I don't know if there have been studies on
that. Oh my God. That's probably not.
No, good. You probably shouldn't be using cocaine for. No, in fact, you shouldn't be using cocaine. You should not be using cocaine for weight loss. But I assume there are some people that might partake. Anyway, we do not recommend. Docs who lift do not recommend that. When you look at the studies, I'd use this. I used this actual argument when I did the debate on aerobic versus resistance training, and I said, hey. 20 to 30% weight loss is lean body mass loss, which is skeletal muscle mass. Doing aerobic training might attenuate that loss a little bit, but resistance training is really what does that. So that was my argument. So in his argument, he goes through some of this, the reasons why we care about body composition, which of course that is absolutely true.
Which certainly we agree with. Yeah.
We do. Absolutely. So he showed there's a subset of patients they did a DEXA scan on in the step one trial. So for those who don't remember our podcast about semaglutide, step one was the biggest kind of landmark study about semaglutide in those with obesity. And for some reason, it would be nice if they did it on all, they almost had 2000 people in this study. It was like 1961.
Yeah. And the average weight loss, because we got to give the context of it, right? So the placebo group only lost about a couple of percent of their weight, right? And the semaglutide group lost close to like 16% total on average.
Yeah,
people have to remember that's on average. And of course, if they were on the treatment the whole time, it was a little bit even better, a little bit over 16% weight loss. And remember, categorically, 75% of people were losing more than 10% of their weight, and over 50% lost 15% of the weight. To give a reminder of the baseline average results of the trial.
Yeah. So in this little supplementary data, they do show the changes in those 140 patients who got the DEXA scans. And it looks like, and I have the little picture pulled up, they lost, 8 point, I sent it to you. Do you have the picture pulled up?
You just ruined it. Yeah. So the total fat mass loss, and this was in kilograms as opposed to percent. So this was straight up absolute weight. It was 8.36 kilograms of fat mass lost in the semaglutide group versus 1.37 kilograms fat mass lost in the placebo group. Now, because of the ratios of who got semaglutide and who got placebo in the trial, it was like a 2-to-1. So there were 95 people who got a DEXA scan that got semaglutide and 45 people who got DEXA scan who got placebo. So there were even fewer people in this placebo part of this whole thing. And then the total lean body mass was a loss of 5.26 kilograms in the semaglutide group. But very interesting to us in this small subset of placebo people, they lost 1.83 kilograms of lean mass. So that somehow in this little cohort, they lost more lean mass straight up than fat mass in the placebo group, which remember, placebo in these trials is a very, pretty basic, modest diet and exercise routine, which is why they tend to only lose about 2-3% of their weight in general. And generally speaking, when you include a lot of exercise, we'll talk about some studies on that, you tend to have much better lean mass retention or sometimes muscle mass gain if done correctly.
Yeah. So if you look at it, it looks like it's instead of that, 20 to 30%, it looks like it's more like 38 to 39%. So in the blog, it kind of makes it seem like, hey, I don't know, this seems like it's a little bit more. There's also, he took a sub-study of the SUSTAIN trial, which was semaglutide and type 2 diabetes treatment that looked around similar amount of a percentile of or percent of lean body mass loss. And so, to me though, like we're going to go over the tirzepatide data because it's more like 20, 24, 25% at the most. To me though, I don't know why the placebo for some reason lost more lean mass than fat mass. That I think there's something there. We may have, you know, we had Grant Tinsley on here. He is an expert on body composition measuring. I've been messaging him back and forth about like, well, does this make really much sense? There can be glycogen changes because the DEXA doesn't necessarily, it doesn't account for that. If you fill up with water in your muscles, it can look like lean mass. So I think there might be some differences there. I do want to go over though, what is it? What's the difference? So what? There shouldn't be anything catabolic. There's nothing to say these things are extra catabolic against muscle. What these medicines do is they put you in a severe, some people is a more severe calorie deficit than what you would normally be able to do compared to just dieting by yourself. But it doesn't change our management. In fact, I tweeted out and said, hey, I'm not worried about this. My patients who are eating protein and working out hard, they have mostly right. fat loss. They get DEXAs. Yeah.
And we have data to support that, by the way, you know, that we can talk about in a little bit with liraglutide.
Yeah. And I will say there is the tirzepatide wasn't shown in this, and tirzepatide is more powerful than semaglutide. So if there's a drug that's going to show more lean mass loss, I would think it'd be tirzepatide, unless for some reason there's an anabolic property or anti-catabolic property of the GIP component in tirzepatide. And that's a stretch.
Which would be very surprising to us. We've never heard of such a thing. And by the way, don't forget about, you know, bariatric surgery. We know, you know, people who lose a lot of weight with bariatric surgery have a lean mass loss. And in fact, I'm looking at a meta-analysis from 2022 right now that, you know, concludes that about 8 kilograms of lean mass and fat-free mass loss was observed within 1 year post-surgery. And that's a meta-analysis. So most of it within the first 3 months. So this is why we need people to lift weights.
Yeah. With when it terms to bariatric surgery, it's around that 20 to 30%. You know, it does seem a little bit higher with this subset, but I think there's something weird that the placebo for some reason lost more lean mass. So I do want to point out here, tirzepatide data, we got the subgroup data from that wasn't mentioned in this blog. And you do the calculations, it looks like about 20 to 25 ish percent was lean mass loss. And that makes sense to me. That fits right within the data. And now these are people that aren't lifting weights and aren't focusing on protein. So I just got a message, a few messages from patients, because they're all, again, reaching out. Someone, one of the patients lost 44 pounds and was focusing on lifting weights, as we are the docs who lift, along with, you know, eating a sufficient amount of protein, and lost 44 pounds, of which only 4 of those pounds were lean mass. So you greatly minimized and like mostly attenuated that signal for lean mass loss, because the conclusion of the study, the blog, was basically to exercise caution. We should be careful. We don't know if it's good to lose fat, but it's also really bad to lose lean mass.
He's scaremongering. And by the way, let's put this into context. So forget the fact that we know muscle mass is good. We want to retain muscle. We want more healthy muscle, right? We also know that even in people that I was just talking about, like the thinner people who have obesity or excess or abnormally distributed adipose tissue, who have complications like type 2 diabetes, fatty liver, we know, we have studies, randomized trials showing that weight loss helps them just as much as it helps people with higher BMI obesities, right? These are things that have come out in the past couple of years that we've highlighted, which is why we don't like the term lean for BMI or low BMI and all that stuff, because they have adipose tissue. Weight loss mostly is going to be fat loss, and it helps people with complications of obesity. And we know that across the board. So if you look at these trials we just talked about, the metabolic health benefits, especially in those with type 2 diabetes, but even those without the type 2 diabetes and they have other components of metabolic syndrome, they all got healthier, right? So why do we care about these things? Why do we care about muscle mass and fat mass? We care about the health. It's literally what's on the inside that counts. We know for sure that all these trials of semaglutide or Wegovy and tirzepatide or Mounjaro and these other therapies that with, and bariatric surgery, by the way, with significant weight loss, we get health benefits. Now, can we improve and optimize those health benefits with trying to retain as much muscle mass? Yes, we think so. Absolutely. But I will say, you know, there was a trial just recently published. I think it was Jack Jakicic's, you know, exercise group. Do you know what I'm talking about, Spencer? It was a behavioral trial of exercise and diet. Basically, there was 374 patients. They randomized to either diet alone or diet plus 150 minutes per week of prescribed moderate intensity physical activity. Now, it wasn't weight training, of course, but all the cardiometabolic benefits related purely to that goal of 10% weight loss that we always talk about. And neither group really had a difference. Yeah. So it was all about the weight loss, not even whether they exercised or not. But that does also bring me, we can talk about that liraglutide trial that literally compared liraglutide to placebo to low calorie diet to exercise and liraglutide too.
I'm looking at what he wrote here. For those with large amounts of excess fat, reducing fat mass is a critical step in improving overall health, but weight loss is not a great proxy for fat loss. It usually is for most people,
right?
Unless you're using cocaine, like I said before, or cutting off a limb. And drugs designed to, or if you have cancer or something like that, obviously, and drugs designed to treat obesity are only beneficial if they improve body composition in addition to body weight. GLP-1 agonists have been celebrated for their potency in reducing body mass, but lean mass accounts for an alarming proportion of this weight loss. So it's not alarming. It's a little bit more in that small subset.
He's making it alarming.
I agree. Like, this is ridiculous. God,
he's making it an alarming.
This is ridiculous. It's a subset. The tirzepatide data is very strong. Like, the tirzepatide, it's like, I don't see a signal here. My patients haven't seen a signal. We get DEXAs. No. We get all
and
sorts
we
of-
want people to lift weights anyways. Yeah. And this... The one thing, though, I will say, so he shouldn't raise an alarm for this, but we do think and will say that as we now have therapies that are helping people lose such significant weight, we don't want to lose muscle.
No, we don't.
So we do probably need to start making the resistance training part of exercise. If either thing has to be prioritized, we do need to probably prioritize more resistance training.
Heck yeah.
But exercise in general.
For patients without excess fat, this considerable risk doesn't seem worth the minimal benefits. Well, you shouldn't be giving this medicine for those without excess fat.
Yeah. So now he's talking about
vanity weight loss.
The concierge, you know, cardiology clinics and stuff like that give out to the Hollywood stars.
Yeah, we shouldn't be giving this medicine to Hollywood stars for vanity weight loss, number one. So then it says, for patients with sarcopenic obesity, alternative weight loss strategies such as bariatric surgery may be more promising options. That doesn't even
make... Oh my God. That makes the least amount of sense I've ever heard.
Why would you give someone with sarcopenic obesity bariatric surgery?
Right, that makes the least amount of sense.
That doesn't make any sense.
No. And in fact, I just said we have the trials showing that weight loss through these other methods with people who have low BMI, but have obesity and diabetes and fatty liver, they still benefit from the weight loss. But we sure as heck need to emphasize resistance training in those
people. So he does try to redeem himself. And he says, even for patients with obesity and sufficient lean mass, which is most patients with obesity have a BMI of 30 and above, by the way, for whom GLP-1 agonists may offer enough benefit from fat loss to justify the lean mass losses, which again, like, stop fear-mongering. Efforts should still be made to minimize the latter as much as possible. Increase weight-bearing exercise and strength training to counteract the losses in muscle and bone loss while taking these drugs. And patients should be careful to consume enough protein. So he does at least say that, which is nice. As we've seen time and time again, there's no such thing as miracle drugs. And GLP agonists are no exception to the rule. I would say that these are, I don't think we should be saying miracle drugs necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, they're game changers and stuff, but they are
game changers.
Nothing's perfect. No medicine is perfect. Nothing is perfect.
May have value for certain individuals, these medications come with downsides. Beyond their hefty price tag, and both physicians and patients ought to exercise extreme caution and discretion in determining whether they are truly right choice for weight management. I mean, of course, you should be doing an assessment for each patient and determining whether the benefits outweigh the risk. Always, with every single medicine.
Yeah, no matter what we do. Every doctor does.
But I'm telling you, with patients with obesity, clinical obesity, these medicines are extremely powerful. The weight loss is due to an extreme calorie deficit. I do not believe there's anything, especially with the tirzepatide. The tirzepatide data is pretty clear. I know it's anecdotal. We're going to have more data on this in the near future. But my patients who lift weights and eat protein, they have very minimal lean mass losses. And I think there's something in that, there's something in that semaglutide subgroup data that doesn't make sense.
Well, and like I said, this smaller trial of liraglutide and exercise, that's not even anecdotal. It's a trial. They did this was just in the New England Journal almost 2 years ago now, May of 2021. They did 8 weeks of a low-calorie diet. There were 200 people, and they were randomized to liraglutide, continued low-calorie diet, liraglutide plus exercise or placebo, which was basically their usual thing. And the bottom line, they did all the body composition stuff. And I was telling you this earlier, but so, you know, in the low, the just the low calorie diet by itself, they lost a significant amount of fat mass and lean mass, like 7 kilograms to 5.5 kilograms, respectively. The placebo group,
I was going to say five divided by 12.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the bar graphs though, but it's,
Yeah. That's 40%.
That's similar. And then, but those in the placebo who just kind of did their usual thing, they gained a couple kilograms of both fat mass and lean mass. The exercise group lost, you know, about 1 to 2 kilograms of fat mass, actually gained a couple kilograms of lean mass. So that's nice. The liraglutide group by itself lost a few kilograms of fat mass, no change in lean mass. But then when they combined exercise and liraglutide, they lost almost 6 kilograms of fat mass and had a hint of a gain in lean mass. So again, yeah, exercise is medicine. It's not great for weight loss, as we've talked about before, but it is very important for health. And when we're using these medications and surgery to help people lose a lot of weight, which is beneficial regardless of the body composition, as it turns out, we do want to hold on to as much muscle mass and be healthy. So exercise is medicine for health. And so that's a good conclusion to have. It just bothers me that he raised such an alarm about
that. It just seemed a little bit, what is the word? Hyperbola.
Well, or sensationalized. Hyperbole. Yeah. He's sensationalized. He's false alarms.
We want to retain. I mean, there are papers. There are literally papers that I use in my debate of why we do want to retain lean body mass.
It is good.
Whether it's bariatric surgery, I don't care if it's bariatric surgery, using phentermine, using cocaine,
Zeptide, a shtickle of cocaine.
Cocaine. What's that song?
Or we all stay skinny because we just won't eat.
Yeah, we all stay skinny because we just won't eat. Anyway,
we all lean mass is important. Rock stars.
Yeah, we always, you know, that's another argument, you know, with the health at every size. They'll say, well, why does anybody talk about being underweight? Being underweight absolutely is a bigger risk factor than having some
mild. That's usually due to other diseases. It's pretty hard to just, you know, become underweight because of
anorexia, obviously.
Yeah, but that's a disease process in itself. I mean,
you could call that a disease, yeah. Because, cancer, malignancies, malabsorptions, celiac disease, who knows?
And that's very bad. Frailty is bad. Exercise is medicine. Exercise is good. Lift some weights.
All right. So anybody's listening to this, I'm not worried about the GLP-1. In fact, like I said, the tirzepatide data is very strong. I don't think there's anything catabolic about semaglutide specifically. No. If my patients, I'm telling you, they lift weights. We get their DEXAs. They're fine. They're losing mostly fat
mass. And all the global leading experts in these disease processes suggest these types of medicines for weight loss in the context of good nutrition and exercise. So that's what we should be pushing.
And don't take these medicines if you just have a small amount of vanity weight to lose. I don't care if it's, you know, like the people talk about.
It's not appropriate anyways.
It's wedding season. I got to fit into my suit or my dress or whatever. And it's like, please don't do that.
Yeah, it's just not indicated. You don't need intensive therapy medication for that.
Yeah. Anyways. All right. That's it. All right.
Soapbox.
take your GLP-1s. We don't.
And listen, weights.
By the way, it might seem like we're shills. We do not get paid. Not yet. We could.
Not yet.
We could. We can do it if we want.
Someday they'll hear a commercial.
Someday we're going to be on a commercial, be like, come get your injection. But seriously, we don't get money yet for this. We specifically do not take big pharma money. Not yet, anyway. Bye.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.